Hi, Shawnee. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, good morning.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm good as well and looking to learn a lot from your SecOps and also varied background. Before we start, Shawnee, for the listeners, could you give a brief overview of your journey to this point?
Yeah, absolutely. So funny enough, I actually went to college to be a pilot and quickly learned that that wasn't the route for me. So ended up transitioning into IT. So I've been in IT now for about 18 years. Started off just as a tier one system administrator for a private company, you know, kind of learning the ropes. And then I decided to move into the managed services space because I thought that was a better learning experience because you then get access to work on many different types of environments. Stayed there for a little bit. And then I was lucky enough in 2013 to fall into the cloud space. There was a startup company that I worked for. That started working with AWS. And I thought that was the next, the future wave of where everybody was moving. So decided to move there. In 2016, I started working on my security journey. As I was working on these client environments, I noticed that security was kind of an afterthought. So but decided to start really concentrating on that and helping fix those issues. So in 2016, I was lucky enough to go and get my CCSK cloud certificate, certificate of cloud security knowledge from the CSA. And after I obtained that certification, I moved into management because I also noticed that there was kind of a lack in security management out there and really started concentrating on my security journey. So in 2020, I obtained my CISSP and I've kind of been doing it ever since.
So I'm actually curious, in 2013, had cloud already taken over in the US? Because in APAC, it was just about getting there. How was it in the US?
Yeah, it had just started. So I think it was around like 2010 where, you know, that's when everybody had started talking about it, but everybody was a bit cautious of moving to it. So 2013, I think, is when we had a bunch of clients actually that wanted to start using cloud as a hybrid model. So I think that's here, at least in the States, when it really started to take off.
Interesting. And just going through your journey, was it something like you started with ops, then moved into security, then moved into management? Is that the roadmap you followed?
Yeah. So, there's a whole bunch of different ops out there now, right? there's always been this disparate between operations, security, networking. So, you know, over the last couple of years, you know, there's been NetOps and DevOps, and SecOps is kind of that next iteration of what's going on. So, yeah, I started off just doing system administration type of work, sitting at a keyboard and punching in commands, and then working in GUI interfaces on infrastructure. So, actually, I moved more into management before security. Once I actually got into management, I was able to concentrate a little bit more on that.
Yeah, it's too many ops floating around. So let's focus on the key one, SecOps. From a 10,000 foot, how does one understand SecOps? And actually, since you've been in cloud for quite some time, how would you look at the germination of this term? How did this come about?
Yeah, I think this, you know, really came from just we needed a collaboration between security and operations. Security has always been an afterthought in my book when it comes to, you know, creating new architecture development. Especially right now, I feel that Ingenuity is surpassing security. A lot of companies out there are really trying to get an MVP product out there as quickly as possible so that they can make money, which, you know, everybody understands you want to make money. But at the same time, they're not spending the amount of time to actually secure their environments, which is a bad thing. So I think that's where it really came from is, you know, there was disparate tool sets between security, operations, developers. So we really wanted to kind of marry those departments together and bring security to the forefront at the beginning of development operations architecture, you know, really limit the conflicting efforts and the tool sets and increase the time to resolve for incidents as well. So, if you start doing that, security becomes proactive at that point and you start involving it at the beginning of projects.
And are we also talking to largely different stakeholders when we I mean, earlier when we were talking about ops and security, and then we combine SecOps. So there is the intention is to combine the teams. But prior to this, were these discussions happening with different stakeholders with different priorities, and hence conflict was a byproduct?
Yeah, and I think that's a big issue with a bunch of companies is communication. There's always been these silos between these different departments. You know, the developers decide that they want to build a product, and then they need to go to the architecting team, and then they go to the security team. So what SecOps, I think, is really trying to do is bring that together. You know, you have individuals that have both the operations side of the house, maybe a little bit of development, but really concentrating on security. So during those initial conversations, you know, you can really get in there and give advice on where we should be going.
Yeah. So before we come to the communication aspect of SecOps, there was obviously an inherent differentiation in priorities, right? So ops would look after performance and efficiency, and SecOps would be, or security would be looking at something on the security domain. And both of them have definitely different KPIs or measurables. So how do these two merge when we talk of SecOps? Who is gaining priority? Where is this headed?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, everybody has their own metrics and KPIs that they need to go after. Mm-hmm. And I think SecOps is really, you know, they're really thinking about overall just security in general. You know, some KPIs that come to mind are like mean time to resolution. I think that's a big one. You know, if a security incident happens, how quickly are you able to actually determine that there is an incident? And then how quickly are you able to resolve that incident? And in the past, it goes back to those silos, right? So developers decide that they want to push code, and they decide to push code without letting somebody know. And then all of a sudden there's an alert that comes through and nobody knows what's going on. So, you know, what SecOps is really trying to do is, you know, using idle best practices as well. So using incident management, problem management, change management, making sure that everyone is aware of what's going on within the environment at any point in time, so that, you know, we can quickly resolve an issue, or at the same time, proactively find an issue before something happens, especially with architecture or pushing development code as well. So as an example, with architecture, you know, getting a meeting and somebody starts whiteboarding something and they start talking about, you know, we need these types of ports open so that we can have access to our environment, and then, you know, quickly being able to say, well, actually, you know, that's very broad. We need to narrow that down.
Yeah, so I actually want to talk a little bit about the structure of this SecOps team. But before we do that, the point which you mentioned was communication. Right? It was failing earlier, and one of the key objectives of SecOps is to get everybody on the same table. So in your experience, what has fostered a good communication between different teams, and what have been some roadblocks just from your own experience managing?
Management, to be perfectly honest. That was another reason that I went into management, is I worked for a bunch of, I don't want to say bad managers, but not very knowledgeable managers when it came to just communication, security, operations. So I really wanted to be that person to foster those relationships between other departments. You know, anytime I was working on a project myself, it was very hard for me to reach out to different peers or different departments to get the answers that I needed. And that was very frustrating. So I wanted to get in there and start opening up those channels. So, you know, just building relationships with the other departments and letting them know that everything's going to be okay. I think security always has this stigma that, you know, if you do something bad, you're going to get a ruler to the wrist. And, you know, you can't have that, because the second people start fearing security, is when they start doing things that are bad for the company. Because as a security professional, you know, you need to be the one that's setting the tone. You know, they always talk about security is everybody's responsibility, which is completely true. But at the same time, you know, I don't know what I don't know. You don't know what you don't know. So you need to really be able to be knowledgeable about that and express your opinions, and just not be afraid to break down those walls.
Yeah, and also the moment people start being afraid of the security team, they start simply hiding stuff. So they are still doing what are bad practices. You just don't know about them.
Exactly. And I mean, that really ties into, you know, big things right now around like phishing and social engineering. You know, somebody clicks on a link and immediately they're like, oh no, I did something really bad. And it's almost like being a kid again. You don't want to tell your parents about it because you're going to get yelled at. And I think that's always in the past, that's kind of been with the security teams is nobody wanted to tell somebody about that. And so you really need to, you know, have those relationships with the departments, be like, hey, you know, this happens. And in this day and age, for sure, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when that this is going to happen. So, you know, being able to be approachable and just, you know, the quicker that I know about something, the quicker I can help fix it. So it is, I think it's all about relationships right now.
True. And just coming to your point about doing something bad and not telling, when it comes to security in general, right? So some part of it is preventative in nature. Some part of it would be remediative in nature. Is that something you look at it from the top? That how much of it we are spending time in preventing something bad happens and how much of it we are spending to make sure that if something bad happens, how do we resolve it?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, those are two chapters in the same book, in my opinion. I mean, you need to spend a lot of time, obviously, on working on being proactive. I think that's the first thing that you need to do is make sure that you've got all your attack vectors and attack services figured out, which goes back to communication. You need to know what's out there. And once you've got, you know, pieces in place, then yes, you need to have some sort of processes and procedures in place. So, you know, when something bad does happen, how do you actually fix that in a reasonable time? And that goes back to that mean time to resolution KPI that we love to talk about in SecOps as well, is when something happens, how quickly can we resolve it? Who do we need to involve? So, you know, one of the non-pretty sides of SecOps is all the policies and procedures that you get to write. But at the end of the day, it really helps your job as well. So, you know, during an actual like either security incident or a severity one incident in general, you have a checklist of what you need to run down to do, because there are a lot of things that you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, I would also be interested to know, again, in your experience, if you had to create the perfect SecOps team, who would be the, what skill sets would be there? What designations would be there? I mean, broadly, what would be the structure here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in the name. It's security and operations, system administrators. So if you think about it back in the day, you know, security was really VPNs and firewalls. And now it's DNS and detection and response, anti-phishing, data discovery, compliance, all that stuff. So, you know, a good background in system administration so that you understand architecture, you know, maybe a little bit of a development. You don't have to have a lot because, you know, you've got really smart developers out there, but, and just understanding tool sets. That's another big thing as well. There's so many different tool sets out there right now. And there's, I swear, there's 10 a day. So being able to quickly learn about new tool sets and consolidate tool sets as well. That's one thing that I've spent a lot of time on is, you know, when I get in somewhere is looking around the different departments and what tool sets they have and being able to quickly determine, okay, well, you know, we're using this over here and this over here. Why can't we consolidate this, save money, save time? So, I mean, to go back to the original question, a good background in just architecture, system administration, and then a concentration on security.
Right. And it's, I mean, so you mentioning consolidation of software solutions, that is a trend which we are looking at in almost all domains. There are simply too many tools out there. And apart from saving money, I think they just increase the complexity. Now you have to train people on different tool sets and maybe you're using all the right features. Maybe you're simply putting it on and nothing is happening. But apart from this consolidation, if we look at the future of SecOps, how do you see it evolving over the coming years? And I would just segment this question into two parts. One is in the context of cloud, how do you see it evolving? And the second would be in the context of automation. So in both of these contexts, how do you see the trends in SecOps in future?
I mean, one thing I like to say is secure all the things. Again, I keep saying it, you know, security is an afterthought and ingenuity is surpassing security. And the future of SecOps is involving security and operations at the beginning of these projects, working closely with developers and architects, using tool sets as well. As I mentioned, there's a ton of attack vectors right now, so it's hard to manage them all. Configuration management is another big one, being, you know, understanding what's currently out there and what's changing. You know, a lot of, I think the future right now is moving away from servers into serverless, which is great, being able to scale. But you need to be able to monitor those. That's another big thing as well, as being able to monitor these attack vectors. And there's so much data that's coming in. So I think AI is going to play a big part in this as well. I know everybody's talking about that right now. But SecOps AI is another big thing that I think that's going to come down the pipe in the next couple of years, just so that we can help manage all these alerts. You know, in the past, there's always been a security operations center that really has taken this on, and they use SIEM tools. But if you think about it, I mean, they're just ingesting raw data all the time, and then you have to have an engineer look at it and then, okay, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? You know, follow a runbook, escalate it up to an engineer. So there's a lot of time that's involved in that. And you know, right now, especially with all the threats that are out there, we need to be able to proactively determine if there's an actual issue, or just quickly say, nope, this is data that I know is there. And So training new people. Right now, there's a lack of security professionals in the field. I hear that at a bunch of conferences and webinars that I go to. So this is the perfect time to get into SecOps and security.
Yeah, and just on the point of AI, I mean, have you seen anything coming up which is applicable right now? Because you're right. I mean, one of the things which we'll see in most of these security monitoring systems is just the bulk of, I mean, the huge amount of data which is coming in. And there is a real, and I think that is what happens mostly, that you miss the signal between the noise. So in that aspect, are you seeing any new tools coming up which you're using, or is there some direction which you're looking at?
I just saw a tool come out the other day, actually. I don't remember the name of it, but I think this was the first one, actual true AI SecOps. Right now, I think a lot of what everybody's working on is the machine learning aspect of it, just being able to correlate events correctly. And again, that's just really training the system to understand what's real versus what's not. So I haven't seen anything myself personally out there, but I'm always looking. So if somebody knows, let me know.
Yeah. And for sure, it's a matter of time, right? The way the technology is proceeding, it's just around the corner.
Yeah. And I mean, and going back to your question again, you know, future of SecOps with the cloud in general, DAST and SAST tools, I think is another thing that needs to be incorporated into the development like lifecycle. So, you know, DAST, dynamic analysis security tools, which is testing your code. It's kind of like a black box security testing. It doesn't have access to your source code. And then there's the SAST, which is the static testing, which is done kind of white box. So it has access. So you've got the before and after. And actually, there's a new one as well. It's the IAST, AST. I don't know how to say it. But that's the gray box type of thing. So you've got the beginning, during, and end. So incorporating those type of scanning tool sets in your SDLC is a good process as well.
Yeah. Moving on, Johnny, there's, again, maybe you've mentioned parts of this, but and something which you mentioned is ingenuity, and between ingenuity and security. Ingenuity usually wins given the pace at which we want the product to be in the market. But for startups, lean startups with a smaller team, what would be these low-hanging fruits to just secure the infrastructure, something which they can really take advantage of right now without worrying about much, and which they're not doing, which they should do but are not doing? What would these initial, something which you can guide them towards?
There's a lot of things out there that people can do that I've seen. So I think the number one is security awareness training. As I mentioned, security is everybody's responsibility, but unfortunately, people don't know what they don't know. So incorporating some sort of annual security training at minimum, maybe starting off quarterly, just understanding phishing, smishing, spear phishing, ransomware, all that good stuff. Train on that social engineering as well. That's a big one right now. Don't click on links. Verify beforehand. I mean, even if it's as simple as just picking up the call, you get an email from somebody that says, they're in your department, but you're not 100% sure. Just call just to verify. Get that second set on there. MFA everything. I think that's a big one. Passwords right now are that's the number one vulnerability out there is compromised passwords because of reused passwords or low complexity passwords. So making sure that you have a strong password, but at the same time enabling that MFA so you have that two factor. So if somebody does get your password and either a social engineering attack or on the dark web, they're not going to be able to do much without that second set of credentials, which is going to be a token or your phone. And then, I mean, along with passwords is, use a password manager. We have so many passwords right now, you can't remember them all, and that goes back to reusing passwords. So, the nice thing about password managers is you only have to remember that one master password, which is really nice. MFA, your password manager as well, because if somebody gets access to your master password, then that kind of defeats the point. So, I mean, there's a bunch out there right now as well. I think everybody's kind of heard about the LastPass issues right now with their. They've had a bunch of security incidents recently, but there's a bunch out there, Bitwarden, 1Password. Just do your research. On top of that is RBAC, role-based access control. So, a lot of things I see as well, especially with startups, is everybody gets administrative rights. Which is a pretty terrible thing just because they have the keys to the kingdom. So just putting some basic RBAC in place, read-only roles or development roles, power user roles, and then granting, temporary administrative access as needed, with a ticket, just so you can audit it, just so if somebody ever comes back and says, oh, well, so and so did this, how can we track that out? Well, I had a change ticket. Or I just had a ticket in general or an email at the point, especially for startups. I know that there's not a lot of tools out there, but just making sure that you can track that back. Tagging all your resources. That's another big thing that I see as well. Just because this is going to help, if I'm in there working on something and something spun up, I don't know what it is, I can quickly go in and look at the tags. Come up with a basic tagging policies, environment, owner, so we know who to reach out. Okay, this is a development box. John Smith owns it. I can reach out to him. This goes back to the configuration management piece as well. In the cloud, use security defaults. There are a lot of security defaults out there that AWS and Azure are really trying to help people with and steer them to, enabling encryption by default, blocking public access to buckets. Those tools are there. Use them. You don't need to go around them. And then I think the final thing is patch. Man, I can't preach patching enough. They always talk about, and I don't know the exact numbers, but it's between like 60 and 85% of attacks are on unpatched software. I think I read a statistic the other day that 1 in 4 are still susceptible to the WannaCry from a couple of years ago, which is a little insane to think about. So always patch your stuff. I mean, especially now with the 0 days that come out, and just the vulnerabilities that exist out there. So patch everything.
That is a great list, actually, Johnny. And the big part is that most of it doesn't cost anything, right? It's basic, simple hygiene which you can implement and just move forward. But I would also love to get your views on this last aspect of patching, right? I mean, when people know this for decades that, right, 60%, 80% attacks are happening because of this one core reason, And even when security has taken a forefront in all communications or in a lot of communication, why does this still keep on happening that unpatched servers keep retaining the number one spot as the attack point?
I think it comes down to level of effort, especially in larger companies. You've got a lot of moving pieces, and especially for companies that haven't adopted the cloud or some sort of scalable solution, it's really hard to do this. I mean, there's a lot of controls in place. You know, you have to, okay, we've decided that this patch is out. All right, well, now we need to discuss with management to get the actual approval with it. Then we need to come up with a change window. You know, when can we actually take the system down? Do we need to notify our clients? So I think that's the biggest issue. And I think it goes back to communication as well. And just understanding what's actually out there. I mean, and it's funny because, you know, Microsoft alone, they have Patch Tuesday every month. They release what's out there, and it should be pretty simple. Okay, we've got these patches that are coming out, and then just immediately, you know, set up a process around Patch Tuesday. Okay, patches are coming out. We're going to test this in development first, make sure that it doesn't break anything. You know, once we verify it, let it bake in there for about a week, we're going to push it into production. You know, we need that change window. But again, I mean, you're already 2 weeks out. Just for patching your production, if you're doing it the right way. But it takes time. And I can't give you an exact answer why some companies don't decide to patch. It could be that they either don't know, which goes back to using, you know, those DAST and SAST tools to actually check that you have what vulnerabilities you have. Penetration testing is another big one as well. You know, just run a pen test. I mean, there's a bunch of tools out there, free tools as well, that you can just run against your environment, and it'll quickly spit back, you know, the top CVEs that are out there. So at its core, patching is very easy. a lot of people aren't doing it.
Well, that remains a mystery for another time. Johnny, this has been a rapid fire overview of SecOps, but before we move on to the end, any tales from the trenches which you would like to share, near disasters, catastrophes averted, anything, any anecdote which comes to your mind regarding this whole discussion we have had?
Oh man, yeah, there's been a couple out there for sure. I think the near disaster ones really go back to, you know, people not understanding security in general. So the biggest one I see a lot is opening up firewall or security group rules on specific ports, 22.3389, 3306, when they're testing something, and they don't spend the time to try to figure out what the underlying issue is. So they're trying to connect to a server, for instance, and they can't figure it out. So they just open up port 22 to everybody, which is a big no-no. So I do see that a lot. And just setting up rules to notify, like, hey, this rule exists, you should probably go take a look at it. So, and again, just educating and communicating with your teams that, you know, in general, don't open these ports to the world. That's bad. Stolen equipment is another big thing. A lot of people, you know, everyone's using laptops now, and I've seen so many times of laptops being left in cars or Ubers that are all of a sudden stolen, which, you know, we'll go into using MDM solutions so that you can actually retire or wipe devices. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of a big one also. And then just compromised passwords is another big one. I've had issues where somebody had their password compromised just in an attack, and their passwords were being used. They were using personal passwords on corporate environments, and which again goes back to using MFA. If your password's compromised, if you've got MFA in place, that's going to help with that.
Perfect. Yeah. I mean, so we actually touched a lot of themes, and I think each one of them could be a topic in itself. But if I had to just summarize, I think security awareness, training, and communication, these are two key components which will remain even if automation comes in, AI comes in, all that stuff comes in. If there is training and if there's good communication, I believe a lot of these issues can simply be resolved, yeah, in a manner of hours.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Communication is number one in my book. You have to be able to talk to your teams and know what's going on. I think one of my biggest issues when I go in somewhere is not knowing what I don't know and being able to communicate with those teams, just to understand what's going on.
Perfect, Johnny. This, as I said, this has been a rapid fire overview of SecOps, but I hope. And I mean, one thing we really touched on, which I'm very happy we did, is that we touched different segments. So whether you are developing your startup or you are on productive stage, or you're actually in production and working with clients, there is stuff to be done. And that stuff need not be overly complex. Right? Simple steps, MFAs, password managers, security training, tagging, configuration management, patching, just doing the basic hygiene steps could help you a lot. And then obviously what you said, don't click on links.
Yep. Yep. Don't click on links.
Don't click on anything. Johnny, it's been wonderful. Thanks so much for taking the time. It's been wonderful having discussion with you.
It's been great being here. Thank you very much.